This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Jacobs Music Company is the proud sponsor of Between the Keys with Jed Distler. Information on any of the products or services that Jacobs Music offers is available on their website, www.jacobsmusic.com. And welcome to Between the Keys. My name is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network. I'm so happy you could join me this week. I could not think of a topic for this week's episode at first, so what I did was I just pulled out a recording at random, and then I looked for a piece of music that had obvious contrasts, and then that led me to another piece, and I kept going and going and going, and before I knew it, I had a program. So it began as random play, and then it ended up as not so random play. So let's begin with the Austrian composer Joseph Marx, who lived from 1882 until 1964. What I find interesting about him is that his style is full-blown late 19th century romantic. I would even call it uber romantic, very much in the tradition of Richard Strauss at his most opulent. Think of Max Reger, maybe Hans Pfitzner, or Eric Wolfgang Korngold. Yet, apparently, Joseph Marx was the one who was responsible for coining the word atonality. And that's kind of interesting because his music is anything but atonal. It is tonal to the proverbial max. Here is a prelude and fugue for piano by Joseph Marx, and we're going to hear it performed by Gianluca Luisi.
Thank you.
Prelude and Fugue by the Austrian composer Joseph Marx with pianist Gianluca Luisi. Vladimir Horowitz told his biographer Harold C. Schoenberg that he thought the most difficult piece in the entire piano repertoire, he thought, was Feu Follet by Franz Liszt. It's one of Liszt's 12 transcendental etudes, and it's basically a study in double notes that have to be played with the utmost clarity and suppleness. Vladimir Ashkenazy has never really been a very big Liszt player, yet the few recordings that he has made of this composer's music, I think, are pretty astounding, and you're going to hear that for yourself now in this recording of Ashkenazy playing Liszt's Feu Follet. Is that Great Liszt playing, or am I a mongoose? That was one of Franz Liszt's 12 Transcendental Etudes, number 5 in the cycle, titled Feu Follet, and the pianist was Vladimir Ashkenazy. The pianist Mark Bebbington has devoted several CDs to the music of Frank Bridge, and what I find interesting about this capriccio of Frank Bridge that we're going to hear now is that the composer titles it Dusk, but to my ears, the music hardly seems to evoke the idea of dusk or twilight. I hear it more as broad daylight, and I also hear something of the influence of Spanish impressionists like Granados or Albanes. But let's see what you think. This is music by Frank Bridge, Mark Bebbington at the piano. Thank you. was a capriccio by Frank Bridge entitled Dusk, and the pianist was Mark Bebbington. That does not sound like a dusky piece to me. That sounds like broad daylight and all kinds of stuff going on the street. The American composer Judith Lang Zeymont is also an accomplished pianist, and she's written a lot of wonderful and I think idiomatically effective works for her instrument. We're going to hear a nocturne that she subtitled La Fin de Siècle, the end of an era, that's what that means. The music actually turns quite un-nocturne-like in the middle section. I think this piece really evokes a wide range of emotions, and I think that is wonderfully conveyed in this performance by Christopher Atzinger. This is Judith Zeymont's Nocturne. Thank you. Music by Judith Lang Zaymont, her nocturne for piano entitled Le Fin du Siècle. The pianist was Christopher Atzinger. And let me remind you that you are listening to Between the Keys here at the Classical Network. I'm your host, Jed Distler. Now let's go to Paris. That was Thelonious Monk. He was just tossing off Vernon Duke's standard song April in Paris, live at a concert in Paris in 1961. I recorded Thelonious Monk's complete songs this past summer for the TNC label. It will be released very soon. I also performed Monk's music in a concert that was webcast and high-definition streaming live from Las Vegas on January 27th of this year, and I thought I would share my live interpretation of a ballad called Monk's Mood. I open up with an improvised introduction that sort of sneaks into the song, and hopefully you will like what I came up with. Thank you. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and you just heard me playing my arrangement of Monk's Mood by Thelonious Monk that was recorded live at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas this past January. The concert and the recording of this concert was produced by Virko Bali. I think that this music can easily segue into the Intermezzo Opus 116 No. 5 by Johannes Brahms, and we have a relatively new recording of it featuring one of our most seasoned virtuosos and musicians these days. This is the great Garrick Ohlsson at the piano. Garrick Ohlsson performing the Intermezzo Opus 116 No. 5 by Johannes Brahms. Whenever I listen to that piece, or whenever I work on it myself at the piano, I'm constantly reminded of how Arthur Rubinstein described Brahms' late piano works as chamber music for piano solo. I think it's a very apt description, because you do get a sense of how each hand and how even each finger somehow seems to be an individual participant in an ensemble of sorts. But I can understand what Rubinstein means. By contrast, though, the music of Frédéric Chopin is so embedded in the piano and is truly a showcase for the keyboard as well as the soloist. And his Polonaise in F sharp minor, opus 44, I think is one of Chopin's greatest and most original compositions. Of course, it has this swaggering main Polonaise theme, yet the central section happens to be a mazurka. Interesting. And just when Chopin is basking in lyrical reverie, along comes these loud scales that just sweep right up the keyboard. And when Vladimir Horowitz arrived at that point, when he got to those scales, he would always manage to shock you out of your seat. Horowitz brought the F-sharp minor Polonaise into his repertoire in the fall of 1967. At least he was playing it a lot in that season. He was preparing for his televised 1968 Carnegie Hall recital. And there are several live, unedited performances with Horowitz in this Polonaise that have been released in recent years. Perhaps one of the most intense and concentrated of these performances, I think, was the one that was recorded at Brooklyn College on November 12, 1967. Let's listen. Vladimir Horowitz playing Chopin.
Thank you.
That's a classic interpretation. Vladimir Horowitz playing Frédéric Chopin's Polonaise in F sharp minor, opus 44. That comes from a live performance held at Brooklyn College on November 12, 1967. I think we've had a good hour of music, full of contrast, yet with an underlying musical arc, not really a thematic arc, but an arc, I guess, shaped by feeling and emotion and forward momentum. What do you think? What do you take away from this music? And what draws you to the Classical Network at this time every week? I have to say that I'm really grateful that you allow me to share my passions and my obsessions about the piano, and that the Classical Network provides this place on the airwaves for you and I to meet every week. Since we have a few more minutes, I thought we could explore the more reflective side of Chopin. This is his Mazurka in A minor, opus 7, number 2, and it is a live performance by another great Russian pianist, Emil Gilels. Emil Gilels at the piano, Chopin's A minor Mazurka, opus 7, number 2. This is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and I look forward to being with you next week at this time for Between the Keys. This program is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.